going to go on to case 12-1502, United States versus Harmon. Take your time. Go ahead. No.
Thank you.
That's fine. Good morning. Good morning, Ms. Ashbrook. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Chelsea Ashbrook. I'm here on behalf of Defendant Appellant Danny Harmon. Mr. Harmon was tried and convicted of a conspiracy to distribute 1,000 kilograms or more of marijuana. At trial, the government presented no evidence of drugs or large amounts of cash that had been taken from Harmon's possession or his home, and instead relied on a number of witnesses that received little or no jail time in exchange for their testimony, despite the fact that many of them had been caught with significant amount of marijuana. At trial, one of the government's witnesses, a jailhouse informant, testified improperly about a prior marijuana conviction of Mr. Harmon. And while the court struck...
That testimony wasn't in that substance, though, was it? Didn't the jailhouse guys just say, after he was busted... He didn't explain what he was busted for or anything, did he?
The question by the government was to Mr. Short, did he tell you how long he'd been in the marijuana business? The answer, he got busted. He told me he got busted back in 91, took it to trial, and got a four-year sentence. So the question was...
Busted for what?
Well, the question, if you read it in context, was how long he'd been in the marijuana business, and he got busted. So in context...
I suppose you could infer that, but you could infer he was arrested for something else, I suppose.
Potentially, Your Honor. But in this case, the question and the answer was especially prejudicial to Mr. Harmon because it was in the context of a marijuana conviction, which was what Mr. Harmon was on trial for. And this improper testimony by Mr. Short infected the trial with unfairness. After Mr. Short's testimony and four other witnesses testified, the jury then asked two questions of the court. One, what did the judge tell the jury to take out of the last portion of Mr. Short's testimony? And two, what part of the testimony should we not consider as far as the trial? And these questions indicate that the jury was confused about what testimony it was to disregard and why, which demonstrate that perhaps the jury improperly was considering the conviction testimony and crediting these witnesses and ultimately finding Mr. Harmon guilty.
Well... You can also draw the opposite inference, I suppose, that the jury was just being very conscientious in seeking clarification as to precisely what the court wanted it to disregard. And there's certainly no reason to suppose that the jury disregarded the judge's instruction.
Your Honor, we submit that these questions demonstrate that the jury was confused, and that these questions rebut the presumption that the jury followed the curative instruction. Immediately after this testimony, Mr. Harmon moved for a mistrial, the jury was instructed about not considering the testimony. And then in the interim, after that instruction had been given, the jury came back the next day to then ask questions. And those questions indicate that potentially the jury was confused and rebuts the presumption that the jury followed the curative instruction and also indicates that the court's initial instruction was no good.
Well, there were problems with that initial instruction. It was vague because it said an objection to the witness's last answer, which referenced some prior conduct of Mr. Harmon, was made and sustained, and it should be stricken. And so the jury really is trying to make sure they know exactly what the court wants to keep out by the follow-up question. So to me, as Judge Rovner pointed out, to me it shows that the jury was being very conscientious because then their follow-up question is, what part of the testimony should we not consider as far as this trial? And then the court actually gave them a specific response, which would have been better initially, so they would have known because the witness had testified about a lot of things prior to that.
Well, the problem with the court's second instruction is it again highlights the improper testimony because it specifies that it was the evidence of the conviction. So it highlights the marijuana conviction and then says disregarded.
And then did defense counsel object to that further clarifying instruction?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. So there was no suggestion by defense counsel as to another way to deal with that?
At that time, that was the way that okay. they decided to deal with it.
Okay.
In light of these questions, we submit that one cannot say that the jury was not swayed by the improper testimony of Harmon's prior conviction and that the mistrial should have been granted. With respect to sentencing, the court erred in a number of ways and the sentence should be vacated. The court first erred by concluding the amount of drugs that Mr. Harmon was responsible for purposes of sentencing, and then backed into its finding. When it initially calculated the drugs Mr. Harmon was responsible for sentencing purposes, it found he was responsible for only 9,639 kilograms. And ultimately then said, no, I'm going to find there's more than 10,000 kilograms he's responsible for. And while that difference may be close, it increased the offense level, it increased his criminal history category, and it ultimately increased his guidelines range.
Tell me this. Do you think that it's plausible to think that Mr. Harmon could support a $5,000-plus mortgage for a second home in Florida on his reported income, for instance?
Your Honor, I believe you're going to the foundation for the 1999 start date. So Mr. Harmon had a legitimate business as a stump removal business.
Right. But could he support $5,000 a month on the proceeds from that business?
The evidence isn't clear, Your Honor, because there was no evidence at the time of his home purchase in 1999. There's no evidence in the record of whether or not it was purchased with a mortgage or cash. The evidence of the mortgage comes later. I believe that was from the 2004 to 2006 time period, which was 5 years after the home purchase. So it's plausible that there was some sort of refinancing in there that could have supported the mortgage. But there's no evidence at the time that he purchased the home in 99 how it was purchased. And that, aside from that, the home purchase is not...
He told the probation officer that he purchased the home in 99 and his monthly mortgage payment was $5,300.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe at the time of sentencing, I believe the mortgage payment was $5,300. But again, there was no evidence how the home was actually purchased in 99. But to that point on the pre-sentence report, the court never indicated that it was relying on the pre-sentence report in either determining when the home was purchased, as there was no evidence at trial or in sentencing that it was actually purchased in 99. And again, the court didn't rely on that for purposes of determining that the conspiracy started in 99 with the home purchase and his ability to purchase the home. But moreover, with respect to the home purchase, aside from those arguments, there's no evidence that the home purchase was tied to this conspiracy. The court also erred in failing to make a specific determination about the amount of drugs over the 10,000 kilograms attributable to Mr. Harmon, which, as this circuit has said, the finding of drug quantity, the specific drug quantity, is crucial in sentencing because it's so important. I see I'm in my rebuttal time. I'll save the rest for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Conner.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Melanie Conower. I represent the United States, as I did in the proceedings below.
So we just had all of this back and forth on whether Mr. Harmon could have supported the mortgage on his Florida home with his reported income. But how important is that issue, in your view, to the finding that his trafficking predates August 2002?
I don't think that the date 1999 is specifically critical, Your Honor, because the evidence is that Mr. Harmon was engaged in this well prior to Mr. Raines joining him in September of 2002.
But was that in the same conspiracy that was alleged and proved at trial?
At the time of sentencing, Your Honor, we presented evidence that was internally consistent in that in 2000, Mr. Glenn Johnson was arrested, gave a statement in May within 3 months of his arrest, naming Mr. Harmon as the individual for whom he was transporting the marijuana. More importantly, he told the agents that he obtained the marijuana from Mr. Harmon's source, Ralph Martinez. And Ralph Martinez remained the consistent partner throughout with Mr. Harmon. That is who Mr. Raines met. The quantities are consistent.
Is that the same conspiracy, though, that was proved at trial? I understand that there's some of the same actors, but is it the same conspiracy?
I believe that the evidence supports that there was a continuous operation conducted by Mr. Harmon with his primary source, Ralph Martinez, in Arizona to transport between 100 and 200 pounds once or twice a month, continuously throughout the year, except for maybe 2 months, to allow for the growing season.
For the judge to reach the $10,000 or 10,000 kilogram figure, she would have had to find that it was the same operation that was in effect prior to that date in 2002, correct?
And in that line, Your Honor, Mr. Raines, when he went to Arizona with Mr. Harmon at the end of 2001, he was introduced to this source, and he was then brought into the operation. As set forth at sentencing, Mr. Harmon, according to Mr. Raines, was already engaged in marijuana trafficking with that same source, Mr. Martinez. And Mr. Harmon was in position to loan to Mr. Raines $125,000 in cash in September of 2002. In point of fact, this entire thing concerns approximately 4 months of drug trafficking, which was within that range that Mr. Raines was also aware.
But the district judge never made that specific finding that that was a continuum and that it was the same conspiracy, correct?
She did not specifically state that, but I believe that her finding was sufficiently clear for this court to find that she did, in fact, find that Mr. Harmon was engaged in this particular marijuana trafficking conspiracy, and his relevant conduct, for which he was personally responsible, did not suddenly start in September of 2002. That his access to cash, his continued involvement, the consistency of these dealings are supported in the record. And as we know, hardly ever, if ever, see a perfect trial. I noted in preparation for today's argument that I have a Scrivener's error that I need to correct in regard to this issue, and that's on page 52 of my brief.
I know, but you're speaking to three former trial judges who did nothing but perfect trial.
That's right.
Then my hat is off to you all.
Several of the times you reversed me.
Well, yes.
On page 52, the very first statement in the argument section, I stated 113.4 kilograms per year. That should have been per month.
Yes.
Mr. Harmon admitted that that was a correct assessment. He admitted all of those months, but he didn't want to admit anything prior to September of 2002 because that would very clearly include up to the 10,000 pounds, which was all that was necessary to place Mr. Harmon in that particular offense category, and it's supported by the evidence from Mr. Raines and from the evidence that was presented at the time of sentencing.
By the probation officer.
And that was the statement as to 1999 as being a clear indication that clearly Mr. Harmon was involved by then. Was Mr. Harmon's statement that was when he purchased the home. That was consistent with Mr. Johnson's statement in May, I believe, of 2000, that he was aware that Mr. Harmon had purchased that house and paid $460,000 for it. And the only source for that income was marijuana.
Why do you think the jury acquitted him on the witness intimidation charges?
I believe that they could have believed all of the evidence but still not found it to be beyond a reasonable doubt, which is clearly within their province. At the time of trial, Mr. Meadows was elderly, and he didn't even want to believe that Mr. Harmon would have done that. And I think that may have weighed very heavily in their consideration. And I see that my time is expired. Unless the court has some questions, I would ask that the court affirm the convictions and the sentence in this case.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Ashbrook, how much time does Ms. Ashbrook? Okay. Since I gave Don Carr an extra minute, I'll give you one, too.
Thank you. May it please the Court. The government points to Glenn Johnson's statement as supporting, aside from the home purchase in 1999, supporting pre-August 2002 conduct, which supports the 10,000-kilogram amount of marijuana for purposes of sentencing. But Glenn Johnson's statement was taken down by a DEA officer in 2000, was then testified to by another DEA officer at the sentencing phase. It involves triple hearsay, and while hearsay, admittedly, the rules of evidence are not closely followed necessarily at sentencing, the evidence still has to be reliable. And in using the 1999 date, the court used that date specifically because it was not subject to a credibility finding. So the testimony and the other evidence the government points to support a pre-August 2002 conspiracy, the court indicated that it was not counting that in using the 1999 start date or in determining when the conspiracy started, because all of that evidence is subject to a credibility finding. And moreover, much of that evidence is not tied to this conspiracy.
Yes, but you do understand, I'm certain, that a district court is entitled to rely on a PSR absent a showing that a PSR is inaccurate, and that did not happen here.
Yes, Your Honor, that is the case. But in this specific case, the court never indicated that it was relying on the PSR in using the 1999 date or in determining his sentence. And that distinguishes this case from any of the other cases where the court specifically states on the record its reasons for relying on the PSR and using that. In addition, the other evidence that the government points to, the Raines meeting Martinez in 2001 and the access to cash, again, there's nothing tying back that evidence to this conspiracy. If the court has no further questions, we'll rest on our briefs, and we just ask that the court reverse and or vacate and remand Mr. Harmon's conviction.
Well, thank you so very much to one and all, and particular thanks to you, Ms. Connor, because you were appointed, and you did a great job for your client. Miss Ashbrook, forgive me.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Connor, you did a wonderful job, too.